There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast, this time presented to you by the Oxbow Country Club, who is also the presenting sponsor of this weekend's action at the Shack. We'll get into some of that a little bit later, but this is a little bit of a megapod. I'm really excited. We've got kind of our current mainstay, as it's been a long time since we've heard from Trev G3. Because football has been gone so very, very long. Our guy, Nate Zastro, lead basketball analyst at Bison Report. How are we doing, buddy?
We are doing good. Looking forward to a big weekend of hoops and should be a fun one. I don't know how the weather is down there, but back here in Wisconsin, we got a blizzard the next 2 days. So I'm thinking Fargo's pretty known for that. So you guys are probably getting smacked with snow as well.
Yeah, it's a full polar vortex on the way. My folks now live about 6 months out of the year in Arizona, and we took one look at the Summit League schedule when it was released and booked about a little 6 day piece around the off weekend next weekend, which happens to also be President's Day. So, my kids are only missing about a day and a half of school, but I am going to escape, and I am very, very excited about it. The victim of my last escape, though, Mr. Jake Stack, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to talk some Bison football, Bison with a Z. I'm a displaced North Dakotan living down here in Kansas City. Yeah. So it is nice to talk to some fellow, you know, my brothers that know how to pronounce the word Bison. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, little background on Jake, folks. A lot of people probably don't know who you are who are listening to this show, which is totally fine. But Jake has been working for me on the Packers side since I took over the CBSI's Packers side, Packer Report. And, didn't know until, probably 6 or 8 months that we didn't know each other, that he was a Valley City Highliner. Jake is from Valley City. Has been going annually with some buddies of ours down to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. And gosh darn, if Pro Football Focus's Offensive Lineman of the Week and Defensive Player of the Week weren't both former Bison and folks that have degrees from NDSU, Dylan Radins and Jabril Cox. So we're going to break that all down now. What was just so folks kind of get a feel for it, though, Jake, like what was different this year, man? Describe Mobile to me, because it had to have been weird. It was going to be, full disclosure, my first year down there. And there was so much uncertainty about what availability would look like. As most of the folks that listen to this podcast know, I was already going to be away from my family in Kansas City, hanging out with you, covering Bison hoops. So I pulled the plug on Mobile and sent you in my stead.
I mean, Ross, you made the right call, you know, because this was my third year doing Mobile and doing the Senior Bowl. And, hats off to Mobile. They do such a fantastic job of hosting that event. Every restaurant you go to, every bar, every person, honestly, is super excited to see people there that are covering that event. But the event itself this year, and, you know, it's really no one's fault. It's COVID. This is a weird year, but it just, you know, it wasn't as important. Not important is the wrong word. It just wasn't as informative as it usually is. You know, in the past, you know, they let you in the room with the guys and you can ask them questions. It's pretty much, you know, open season on asking these guys questions about, yeah. whatever you want, you know. And what's really nice about it is we're so early in the process right now that a lot of these guys are not super polished up about how to answer questions. They have, you know, their agent hasn't been in their ear about the whole, whoa, 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 don't answer that, you know, that type of stuff. So this year, that's the best reason you go down there to cover this thing. And that just didn't happen this year. And what they had was four phone lines that every morning you could email the Senior Bowl director and say, I would like to talk to these five players today. And yeah. if you were lucky enough, they would call you on the phone line. And me, Matt, Craig, and Kent, you know, the four guys I was down there with, every morning we would map it out and say, hey, I'll take these five guys, you take these five, so on and so forth. Not a one of us got an interview with any of these guys, got to talk to any of them. The only two guys I got to talk to were Frank Darby and Michael Carter. And that was just at the end of practice. They came up to the stands with the microphone and they just got bombarded by guys. And you basically would just yell a question at them and they would answer it. So, you know, that part of it was a bummer. It's still nice being there for practice. You do get to see practice. And, you know, with guys like Radunz, you see, you know, with those trench guys, you really see who's moving bodies, you know, who's popping pads. That's the stuff that you really like to see live. Now, everything beyond that, like the one-on-ones, the team stuff, you know, you get sent the practice film if you're credentialed media at the end of the day, and you can just boom, 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 watch every single rep. So we were kind of joking, like, you know, we probably could have just done this at home this year. But like I said, you know, in the intro, Mobile really does a great job of hosting this event. So I'm excited next year for, you know, everything to be back to normal. And I'm sure next year will be a really special year, you know, just with everything back to normal and people even more excited to be able to host that event.
Yeah. And that's something I think that is kind of a misnomer too, about the NFL Combine and why, you know, guys like you and I go every year. It's for access to the players and the ability to ask them questions that you actually want the answers to. And also just the fact that every key decision maker for all 32 teams are stuck in this like 16 block radius, and you end up, you know, accidentally having a beer with the ex scout from the Chiefs or, you know, Y front office guy from the Packers or just whatever. It's not about the game and it's not about the drills. In fact, everyone leaves before the game in Mobile and we aren't even allowed to watch the, you and I went back to our Airbnb and watched the drills in last year's combine. It's about how they interact. It's about one-on-ones and the team period and watching them take coaching and then the actual access to the players. But you know, that was the number one thing, man, was the practice. And it goes hand in hand why everyone's saying that North Dakota State had such a great week, because the two top practice players at their positions were both Bison as far as the ones that were sent. And you know, this is kind of there aren't going to be a lot of LSU fans listening to this podcast complaining that we aren't referring to Jabril Cox. He's a Bison. Jabril Cox is a Bison. There's no question about that. Let's start with Jabril, because I think heading into this week, he was probably considered the better prospect, maybe. I mean, I have very similar round – I don't have similar grades on the two, but I have very similar round projections on the two. I think they'll both go between 25 and 45, in my opinion. But what did you think of Cox's week? What stood out? What were his concerns coming in? And what did he kind of do to answer those concerns?
Yeah, well, I mean, talking about LSU, and I don't think this is really Jabril's fault, because looking at LSU going into this year, I don't blame him for transferring there. But I think if he would look back on it, I don't know if he would do that again, just because LSU, things didn't really go probably how he expected them to at LSU. And I think some of the concerns then that arose were, okay, is this kid as good as we thought he was at North Dakota State? Because, you know, he's getting moved around a little bit at LSU. He's playing with the big boys in the SEC now. Can he hang? And I think what he did at the Senior Bowl was remind everyone that yes, yes, he can, because I don't think it was necessarily him. I just think he kind of got stuck in a bad situation at LSU this year, because if you watched LSU this year, they were bad. Like, they were not a good team. And I thought Jabril was one of the bright spots on that defense. But the first thing that stuck out, I mean, you just watch these linebackers warm up, and, you know, Patty Fisher, nice linebacker, you know, good college player, made a billion tackles at Northwestern. Tough Borland, kind of the same situation from Ohio State. But man, you just watch these guys just going through warmups, just backpedaling, opening up their hips, changing directions. And when you watch Patty Fisher go, Tough Borland go, and then here comes Jabril Cox after those guys, he's a different animal. He's just not even, it's almost an insult to say he plays the same position as those guys when you just see the way that he moved throughout warmups. And then fast forward to the one-on-ones. Now, to kind of set the stage here for these one-on-ones, they basically say, hey, linebacker, you go stand here. We're going to put a tight end and a running back, you know, either on the line of scrimmage or 5 yards in the backfield. We're going to tell them what route they're going to run. They're going to run it on you. This is very, very much geared towards the offense. Like, hey, linebacker, you have the whole field to cover. You should not win. You should never win if you're a linebacker. Pretty much no one won. Nobody was winning the reps, except Jabril Cox, probably won about 50% of them. And that is where I think teams saw him, and that is where teams are going to drool about him, is the fact that he is long, man. Like, I mean, I think he had a 7-foot wingspan. He came in at over 230, 6'2". He checked every single box as far as his measurables, so people were excited about that. And then he came out, and I mean, he moves like a safety, not like a thumper safety, like a safety that can cover and can cover ground. And
he's a glider.
And in the pass rush drills, that's really where I was really, because you know what he can do in pass coverage. Like, even, you know, I don't want to say even at NDSU, but NDSU is not just an FCS school. It is the FCS school, right? It is probably better than the majority of FBS schools, if we're just going to call a spade. And what they would do with Jabril at NDSU is unheard of. I mean, hey, Jabril, they have, you know, Kate Johnson, who was at the Senior Bowl, made a lot of noise,
clamped.
Had a nice week. Yeah. NDSU basically said, hey, Jabril, every time their All-American receiver is in the slot, how about you just kick out there and you just disrupt him and don't let him do what he wants to do? And he didn't. And that's what Jabril Cox is going to bring to an NFL team. And I think that's what teams saw this week. And I think it was Matt Miller that said, you know, coming into this season, he thought Jabril could be potentially a first round draft pick. You know, then the LSU season kind of happened. I think people were like, is he? And after that week at the Senior Bowl, I think he has pretty firmly cemented his place. Probably highest he could probably go is, like you said, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him go 25, 26. It's a range that guys like that with that skill set that they can do. And I guess what I was going to say as well that I was really impressed with at the Senior Bowl was his pass rushing ability. You talk about the one-on-ones again. He was unblockable. He's too athletic. He is just too athletic for tight ends and linebackers to get hands on him, and he's too flexible. You see the flexibility in his ankles, knees, and hips like you do in some of these elite pass rushers. Now, I'm not saying like you need to draft him to be a 3-4 edge, but the fact that you could probably play him at weak side, at strong side, or play him at the will in a 3-4 and just let him wreak havoc, that's impressive, man. I think, you know, the issue that I still saw with him that I think is always probably going to be an issue is he's not a thumper, right? He is not a guy that's going to take on a guard and toss him aside and make the tackle. It's just not who he is. But the good news for him is those thumpers are a dime a dozen. The skill set that he has is what's rare, and that's what teams are going to be excited about, are excited about. I mean, there was plenty of buzz about Jabril Cox that week at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, he would have been, and I this is a take that I haven't really fired off, but I think he would have been outside of Derek Tuska. I think if they would have had those two line up as defensive ends together, it would have been a freak show. With his length at 6'3", because of his arm span, there are plenty of 6'3" rushers that make it either way. It's not ideal. You'd like to be 6'5" like Derek is, but he had 14 sacks in 3 seasons as a Bison. And one of those kind of a part-time season as far as 2017 is concerned. He wasn't like the preordained starter. That kid has hips and ankles for days as far as fluidity. He could have been, like I said, between him and Tuska, man, they could have been two All-American pass rushers.
Was the sentiment all week at the Senior Bowl was for him and Raiden's. How did these two kids who look like the two most athletic kids at their position, why weren't they playing at Alabama? Why weren't they playing at Clemson? How did they end up in Fargo, North Dakota?
Iowa,
you know, like
Iowa and Minnesota whiffed so hard on Dylan. The Jabril thing's more explainable. He was a high school quarterback in the Kansas City area that blew out his knee, and NDSU just got super lucky. But, folks identified early on in his time at NDSU that kid was more talented than FCS. And, he's one of the most gifted players to ever play at North Dakota State, if you ask me. Just a unbelievable player and really good kid, really humble. I enjoyed all my interactions with him. But like I said, 14 sacks, and basically they had him play slot corner. That's where you have the versatility there. All right, let's talk about Rado, because I think, I've had conversations with folks within the program that think he might end up being a center. They repped him at center, so there is practice film if teams want it of Raiden's playing center. But the simple fact of the matter is, if you can play above average left tackle in the pros, they're going to have you play left tackle. And he was the best tackle at the Senior Bowl, according to Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus, according to most in attendance, according to the defensive lineman that had to go against him and voted him the player of the week. Give me your spiel on my guy, Dylan Raines.
Dylan's a little bit more interesting, because with Jabril, it was like, dude, from the second he was on the field, you're like, yeah, he's a dude. With Raiden's, though, that it was funny, because his first couple reps, and this was something I had to convince the guys I was with. I was like, no, this kid is good. Like, just wait till you see this kid live. You're going to like him. His first two reps were his worst two reps of the week. Like, I think I sent you those clips, and your response was basically, my God, stay on your feet, man. And what it was, though, and what it proved to be, was a kid that hadn't played hardly any football in a year. And you could kind of see it in his feet. For a kid that's as athletic as he is, his feet stopped, and he went to a knee. And I think once he got his feet under him, it was full systems go from then on out. Because after that happened, and what really helped him is, I think, getting into the team reps on that first day. Because once team started, he was firing all cylinders again. And you see him, just his athleticism, he doesn't have the best length. His arms, I believe, came in at over 33, almost 34, which is kind of in that gray area. But what he makes up for with it is his footwork and his foot speed and how well he gets and how quickly he gets into his pass sets. His flexibility too. That there was one rep where I think it was Dalen Hayes, who had a really good week from Notre Dame. Just heavy, heavy hands got right up in Dylan's chest and knocked him back initially. But the way Raiden's can recover within almost a limbo stance, just backed over, but his feet were kept under him, and he just stonewalled him from that position. That was a rep that had, not many things get a big ooh and ah out of the crowd, but that one did. And that was really, I think, when people started to notice this kid, like, whoa, like that was impressive, And if you have that type of flexibility, some of those other shortcomings, like the arms, which aren't really that big of an issue, but like teams are going to pick that apart. That's when you say, okay, can this kid play tackle? because the thing with him, he's kind of like Jabril in the sense of he's not a slobber knocker. You know, he's not a kid, I think, at the next level that is going to be leading the team in pancakes. Where he wins is with finesse. And, you know, you talk about a zone blocking team. And I think I honestly, when he came out on day two and was taking reps at center, there were guys around me just saying like, oh, like, you know, that had it, like you could see them and hear them processing that. Just like, oh, wow. Like, okay. Yeah. So this kid is super athletic, super flexible, gets to the second level extremely well. You saw that on day one at left tackle, him, his ability. And what I mean by that is, you know, his ability to combo block, get to a linebacker and finish a block on the second level and all the while stay on his feet and look like an athlete. His ability to do that, you could kind of see people processing that and just being like, wow, he could be, this kid could be an all-pro center if you want to play him there. But like you said, if you can play tackle, that's where you're going to play. And if he can play tackle right or left for a team, I would imagine that's where he's going to be at. I thought his worst reps of the week were at guard, actually, which is interesting. Just because you could tell that was something that he was kind of learning on the fly. And he did have a propensity to get out in front of his skis a little bit when he played guard. But I think that's just technique stuff. And I think he showed the athleticism measured in good enough. And like you said already, his teammates and coaches and everyone he played against said, this kid is the practice player of the week. And that is, you know, that's above, well, I guess the Mariners kid was like the MVP, wasn't he? The muscle gut kid. But in any case, I mean, that's high praise, getting that from your teammates, for especially from the small school that is NDSU, because on the sidelines, there was, you can hear the guys talking because there's hardly anyone in the stadium. And I think it was one of the Pitt kids, either Weaver or Jones, that came over on the sidelines and they were frustrated. And someone was talking to him and like, hey, man, what's the matter? He goes, man, that kid, that yellow helmet guy. And he was talking about Raiders. And so the fact that I think some of those guys didn't really even know who he was at the beginning of the week. He just was the yellow helmet guy. And he was just bodying people. He just looked like he belonged in an FBS school, kind of. You know, you already mentioned it, but, you know, he was a kid that had offers or basically, I guess, I don't know, but it sounds like Iowa and Minnesota could have had this kid and they didn't take him, which sucks for them because there was an Iowa kid at the Senior Bowl that did not look good, as good as Dylan.
Yeah, and Dylan's thing too is he had a Mizzou offer the night before signing day. Mizzou came in super late, SEC school, obviously, and he said, I'm a big Bison. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a big deal too, that hip flexibility and the flex, that is a Jim Cramer thing. That's North Dakota State's, you know, head strength coach, associate athletic director in charge of performance. And he is, underrated as much press as he gets, probably more than any strength coach in FCS. I think he's still underrated. You look consistently at the three cone drill, and you will find Bison at the top of the combine, at the top of the entire college football world, guys, at this agility drill, the three-cone drill. Easton Stick was top like 1% ever. Derek Tuska, I believe, was the top of his class, and I think you'll see that with Raidens. And that is because of the and I've done some of this stuff because Cole Jerick and Christian Dudzik teach it at, or taught it. Christian's no longer there. He's got his own deal going now. But they taught some of this RDL hip flexibility stuff at Dynasty Performance Training. And our guy, you know, friends of the show, Rise Fitness, Chase Morlock does it as well. The hips are huge, and flexibility and hip strength and core strength and the ability to, you know, kind of still be sprinting even though your body's at a 45 degree angle. That is something specific to North Dakota State, and I think he's going to test like an absolute madman, and it's not surprising to me that he got oohs and ahs because of his flexibility, because that is a Bison staple. It's not just a, you know, coincidence that Easton and Tuska, and I believe in the very near future, Dylan Raidens, all kick ass at that drill at the combine. Not like, oh, they finished in the top five. No, they whipped everyone.
And I think here's a fun nugget on Dylan as well, that I'm in the stands talking to some guys that write for a 49ers, I think the 49ers SB Nation site. And there to the right of me and sitting in front of me is an ex NFL offensive lineman coach, Coach Paul Alexander. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should. He's a great follow. But they were talking to me and just said, well, yeah, he's been working out with Joe Staley all offseason. And Coach Alexander turns around and goes, well, yeah, look at him. He looks like a young Joe Staley. And he's right. And we're talking Joe Staley, you know, multiple time all pro in the NFL. And I think, again, I'm going to reference Matt Miller again, it's funny that I'm referencing him because he has not always been kind to Bison prospects. But he said, you know, he mentioned Jabril as a first round pick. And he's been higher than just about anyone I've seen on rated this entire time. I think he had him in his top 10 at one point. I'm not sure if he still does, but I mean, man, that's some high praise. But I think the thing is, once he measures at the combine and once he works out, if he can put the type of athleticism you see on the field, if he can put that, you know, or his pro day, I guess is what it'll be this year. But in any case, if he can show that type of elite athleticism, where's the flaw in his game? You know, you want to knock him that his arms are an eighth of an inch too short. You know, I think Brian Bulaga had a really great quote when he had similar arm length coming out of Iowa. And I believe he said, you know, my arms may be short, but I've never really had any issues, you know, reaching something off the top shelf, because it's silly. You know, he's got everything else. And I think he's close enough there that, you know, in this class, could you see him starting to kind of push for that offensive tackle three? There's some talk about Darisaw from Virginia Tech not loving football, you know, so I could very much see him jumping him and being the third offensive tackle off the board. Would not surprise me in the slightest.
All right, before we let you go, Jake, and we really appreciate your time tonight, give me the skinny on, you know, Spencer Brown, Cade Johnson, just folks that our Bison fans would have heard of before.
Yeah, Spencer Brown, big dude, right? I think that's what stands out to you, even amongst other, you know, NFL prospects.
Large humans.
Still a very large man. I think what his problem is he's on the ground a lot. I think that was his issue at the Senior Bowl as well. That was his issue at UNI. Talking about getting out in front of your skis. You know, he can be a guy that leans too much, and I think he kind of showed that this last week. I think there's still plenty to like there. I think a lot of teams are going to see him and say, wow, this kid moves really well for how big he is. Let's take that ball of clay and see if we can develop him. Cade Johnson was kind of the toast of the town, honestly, you know, for those first couple of days. Really impressive during one-on-ones. I don't think there was a corner or safety there that could guard him one-on-ones. But like I said, with the running backs, when I was talking about Jabril, that is very much geared towards the wide receivers. Another FCS kid that was kind of the toast of the town a couple of years ago was Penny Hart. And, you know, similar build, similar athletic profile, similar performance at the Senior Bowl. And we haven't heard much from Penny Hart since he's been in the league. And so that would be my concern with Cade is, can you do it during team drills? And which is something that I didn't see him really show up during team drills. One-on-ones were great, you know, but that's not where the game is played. But I think he still improved his draft stock quite a bit. As a guy that I think, you know, showed a little bit more than maybe what teams thought. I think coming in, people kind of just viewed him as like this jitterbug type. I think he showed a little bit more than that this week. But, you know, I still think he's probably a day three type guy. But he represented the FCS division of football really well.
All right, brother. Thank you. And before we get to Nate, we want to mention that this show is once again brought to you by the Oxbow Country Club. Folks, I've been an Oxbow member since 2005. A little break there when I moved down to the Wahpeton area, home of Ryan Smith. But it's just a great place. It's like if you put an elite golf course out in the middle of nowhere in North Dakota, except it was only a 15-minute drive from Fargo and all the people were the exact opposite of what you think when you think country club. Really down-to-earth folks, not only those who work there, but those that are members. And lots of fun stuff. Like they've got a Super Bowl party You know, coming up this Sunday, all you can eat. It's going to be super fun. And then like there's a cooking class next Tuesday that Chef Scott is going to be in charge of, where he teaches you how to make homemade pasta, like super fun stuff like that going on all the time out at Oxbow. Like I said, I have been a member out there in some way since 2005 and just could not more highly recommend it. It's been a very, very fun experience. It is now, you know, that the redesign is done. It is the premier longest, you know, championship course, anywhere from, you know, 5,200 yards to the challenge of 7,300 yards in the wind, man. It's just, it's a championship level golf course and a championship level practice facility with championship level people all around. So definitely worth checking out, and check out Oxbow Weekend at the Shack at this weekend against Oral Roberts is going to be a ton of fun with a ton on the line. And to break that all down, we bring on the lead hoops analyst, Nate Zastro, two-time North Dakota State men's basketball captain. Nate, are you ready?
I am ready. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. It's kind of a tale of two different teams. Oral Roberts can score it and can't really defend, and NDSU has had some moments struggling to score, and they really defend. So it's going to be interesting to see which side kind of folds in these two matchups.
Yeah, you go and look at the BRTV that's coming out today with Jackson Notek and kind of his commentary on the different styles. And I make mention that, yeah, like look at the point totals when UMKC played Oral Roberts and when UMKC played NDSU, both very similar results where it was a split where, you know, one team got one by six and the other one got like a one possession game or something like that. But they were played in the 40s, and then the other game was played in the 70s. Like this clash of styles is truly, truly unbelievable. And they are led by kind of a, well, they don't, you know, play defense like those guys did, but they're led by kind of a Michael and Scotty type situation, because they, I believe, have, and I'm going to just check on this really quick to make sure that it is accurate, but I believe they have two of the top, yeah, they do. They have two of the top three scorers in the Summit League. And NDSU checks in with their highest guy at ninth, and that is Rocky Cruiser. But Max Asmus is the number one scorer in the league at 21.6 a game, and Kevin O'Banner is right behind him there at 19.1.
Yeah, those two, they've obviously been there, were really good last year. O'Banner's showed some signs as a freshman that he was going to be a really good player. He's obviously gotten some years of experience. He's gotten a little more consistent. He's shooting it well from three this year, 43%. Amish, it's not like these guys are just jacking up shots. They're shooting a really good percentage, which makes them really tough to guard. You got Amish at 46.8% from the floor, 42% from the three, 87% from the line. And then you got O'Banner shooting 50% from the floor, 43% from the three, and 88% from the line. That's tough to guard, especially since it's a guard and a forward. And I kind of calculated the shots that are taken. And, I mean, they shoot 42% of their shots, and they score over half their points. That's not to say no one else can score on their team. They got a couple other guys, one other guy in double figures with RJ Glasper at 11.4. But like we've talked about, they can score the ball. They struggle to defend. So if NDSU gets up with any type of lead in any of these games, just know that Oral Roberts will have the firepower if they need to come back. But NDSU, I think, just needs to worry about themselves. It starts on the defensive end. And hopefully they can get their healthy and ready to roll with a full roster. We've kind of had Oral Roberts' number a little bit the past couple of years, and hopefully we can keep that momentum rolling. They say that it's a new season, but that's definitely in the back of both teams' minds going into this matchup, and it's a big matchup. I mean, NDSU's 8-2, Oral Roberts 6-2. Both the South Dakota schools play each other. If NDSU can somehow find a way to get a sweep here, I mean, they're one game out, as long as those South Dakota schools split, which kind of leaves it to the last 2 weeks when they all play each other. And got to take it one game at a time. We've talked about that all year. It's going to be a tough matchup and should be an entertaining one because there's been games where NDSU can really score the ball as well. And if they're scoring and playing defense like they know how, I think they could get to this weekend.
Let's talk about O'Banner because I think Amos, like, look, there's nothing. I'm not talking down to him. He's the freaking leading scorer in the conference. Like, he's a very, very good player. He's probably going to end up being first team all league. But he is what many mid-major guards are. I think he's like 6'3", you know, can play on the ball, can play off the ball a little bit. He is whoever you want. Like, if you want, actually 6'1", so he's even shorter than that. So he's going to be giving up, you know, plenty of height to whoever guards him. And they probably throw Edie on him, or throw Sam on him. Maybe, you know, maybe even some Malik just to give him a different look. But talk to me about the defensive matchup and the stylistic matchup with Kevin O'Banner, because this is a guy who last year led the team in blocks. You know, he's 6'8", 225. Had 8 double doubles, so he rebounds the ball pretty well, and is an efficient player. Like, what do you think the defensive matchup is for him? What do you think they go with, and kind of who do you think gives him the most trouble, or how do they defend this guy?
You know, I think you got to do it as the game goes along. I think Rocky starts out on him. I know last year, he was more of a low post player, and he really kind of pounded NDSU on the block a little bit. He has a post game, and obviously he's extended that to three. If he starts hitting a couple from the outside, NDSU may have to go to a small lineup until they plant him back on the block. He's a tough matchup. He's 6'8". He's a tank. He's big and strong. So I think Rocky's got to be the matchup to start, and that's not a knock on Rocky. He can guard him on the perimeter. I just think the way NDSU guards ball screens for the most part, Amos is going to come off a lot of ball screens and do a lot of kind of one-on-one type stuff because he is a player that can make plays. So, I think Rocky to start. If you go to your small lineup, you can kind of put some length and decent strength on him with a guy like Edie. I think he's not going to be able to bang around with him on the block. And if he's sitting on the perimeter and you want to go small, you can put a guy like Sam on him. I think that's what makes NDSU very versatile is they can throw a bunch of different matchups at guys with their size. And if they're fully healthy, there can be a lot of different combinations this weekend.
Yeah, and I think like he'd be a perfect guy in 2 years to throw Grant Nelson on, but right now Grant just doesn't have enough weight in the seat of his pants. It's not. There's nothing that's Grant Nelson's fault. It's just like Kevin O'Banner is a redshirt. He's probably a 22-year-old man. And right now, Grant Nelson's kind of an 18-year-old kid. And an 18-year-old kid that underwent like a ridiculous growth spurt, you know, went from 6'3 to 6'10 and just is not, you know, he's not 6'10, 260 yet or 6'10, 250. I don't know what, you know, what you'd like to hang on a 6'10, 6'11 frame. He is a tough matchup for Grant, and you know, has certainly a height advantage on Tyree, but Tyree's so damn strong and so physical and does such a great job of playing on-ball defense without fouling. It'll be interesting, but I think when you feel like you have two stoppers in Sam and Tyree, I think you feel like you match up pretty well. And I've looked at some of the advanced numbers and, you know, like BPI thinks NDSU's got a 63% chance of winning both games. You like to see that, you know, in a game like this where you got to have two. And I think they do. I think they have to have two. And it starts on Friday night. Offensively, to me, Nate, and you can, you know, let me know if you don't agree, but I think it all comes down to making open shots. And I know that sounds stupid, but this is an Oral Roberts team that is not going to defend NDSU because they don't defend anybody, but they're not going to defend NDSU. And, you know, if we see open looks clang off the back of the rim, they're going to be in for a war. You know, when they play like they did night two against Denver, where they know they have to have it and they play well offensively and they guard. I mean, I think they could beat this Oral Roberts team by 10, 12 points. I think it's possible because sometimes a team like Oral Roberts, as you've seen, you know, NDSU's ended their season for two consecutive years, drives their coach insane. I'm not the biggest fan. But, you know, they've won all their games. I can't remember the last time they lost Oral Roberts in Fargo. Went down to maybe and lost last year in a tight one. But they win in Fargo and they win in Sioux Falls against these guys because I think they just drive them nuts. I think they guard, and Oral Roberts is really not – they kind of want to play that up-tempo NBA style. They don't really want to be guarded. And NDSU does not – oblige, but offensively the Bison have to make open shots, and they have to convert at the rim, and if they are able to do that, I really like their chances. A little bit of, you know, we're going to sprain some news here, because this is coming out on Friday. I don't fear the wrath of the coaching staff. Malik Harden-Hayes is going to play. He told me that in the episode of BRTV that is also going to hit today. Malik was available, and I'm using air quotes, on a podcast, which is awesome, but he was available for emergencies. I think if, you know, that night they were playing basically six guys, I think if Jackson or Tyree would have gotten hurt, you would have seen Malik. But they wanted to save him because of this matchup, the feeling that they need to get to. And then the light at the end of the tunnel, folks, is NDSU, as I mentioned, I'm going on vacation. Why am I going on vacation? Because their bye week follows. So there is such an opportunity for relief here, for an exhale. If the Bison can grab two, there is a beautiful light at the end of the tunnel where they have 2 weeks to prepare for South Dakota State at home, get Bowden healthy, get Malik healthy, get Jarius healthy, get some rest on those legs of Edie Cruiser and Sam, who have been so strong all year. And I think, you know, this is a big deal. This is a big weekend, Nate.
Yeah, and like we talked about, if you can get to 10-2 and you got four left against the teams that are technically ahead of you, obviously they have a lot of games to play, but they're playing each other this weekend. NDSU gets a full week off. Won't surprise me if they even take a couple days off from practice just to get their legs back. Get re-energized, and you get 2 weeks to prepare for the biggest four-game stretch of the season if you want a regular season title. They control the standings, where they want to finish. I mean, ultimately they do. If they want to win a conference championship, you got it right in front of you. You got the three best teams with you coming up in your next six games.
Yeah, I mean, that you're exactly right, because – you know, and I don't think it'll happen. I don't know, it would be crazy, but yeah, you're right. They go 6-0 and they finish 14-2. They'll have given South Dakota State two, and they'll have given South Dakota two, and they'll have, by the way, been the only damn team in the league to actually play all their 16 games, or maybe what feels like the only damn team in the league. But there wouldn't be any arguing if they're 14-2 and South Dakota State is 8-2. There's not gonna be any arguing.
Yeah, and who knows if those games are going to be played, and that's a lot of games in 1 month, and
yeah,
I don't think South Dakota State's going to want to do it before a conference tournament. Go ahead and play four games in a week or six games, and yeah, it's just something that I don't think a coaching staff wants to do, especially so close to the conference tournament where you need to win three games in 3 days, or three and 4 days if you got to buy. But yeah, I know we're talking ahead a little bit here, a huge opportunity, and would be great to get to this weekend. And I know we've talked about it, but just huge opportunity. It's a team that they've had success against. Easier said than done, like you said. Also, you got to hit shots, and I think NDSU shoots the ball. I'd have to look at the splits, but they seem to shoot the ball a lot better at home than they do on the road. And I think that with fans, they're going to have a little bit more swagger at home. Hopefully they don't have any moments of complacency like they've had in their last two homestands, and hopefully they just keep hitting shots and keep it rolling for a full 40 minutes like they did against, I think it was Denver, where they played just a really full game defensively and hit shots throughout. We're having fun. Crowd got into it. Hopefully we can get that this weekend.
Yeah, I think you do a little bit of minutes management with Jarius, you know, with that ankle. You get, you know, fresh legs, because it was an upper body thing for Malik. You got fresh legs with Malik. Jackson has shown the ability to play 25 minutes. And, you know, if you go 18 to 22 minutes with Jarius, Give Jax 24 minutes. Give Malik 24 minutes. You know, you're going to be able to do a little bit more of a balanced rotation there, especially now that you've seen so much from Desmond McKinney, and trust him the way that you really do need to trust a backup point guard to go in there and give you valuable minutes if you need them. And, you know, the last thing I want to talk about is just, you know, Sam and Tyree, because you and I think maybe 3 weeks ago got on this podcast and I asked you who the best player on the team was, and without hesitation, we both said Sam Griesel. Do you have the same answer?
I think so. Tyree's very, very close behind. And I think if there's been a lot of games where it's kind of goes unnoticed, and we talk about how he's kind of the quiet killer where he's just super efficient and just always puts up numbers. And I think if there's some of these games that they're kind of squeaking out where teams came back, if Tyree doesn't put up his 12 to 14 and 5-6 rebounds and 3-4 assists, is NDSU in that same spot? I just think guards get more credit. Sam's got the ball in his hands making plays. He rebounds. He takes guys in the post. He'll hit an occasional jumper. I just think all-around game, I think it's Sam still. But Tyree's close behind, and his efficiency is one of the best in the NCAA, which you posted about, I think it was last week. Both valuable. The three guys, Tyree, Rocky, and Sam, you take any of those three off this team and they're middle of the pack Summit League team. So I think all three have kind of the same value to the team overall and all around. I think it's still Sam by a slight margin, but like I said, you take any of those three off, they're middle of the pack to the bottom of the league.
And like, you know, the funny thing is Rocky is, you talked to the folks around the league, Rocky's their player of the year candidate. And he's the one guy you didn't really mention there. It's wild to me.
Yeah. I think Rocky's had some pretty big games and really had some impactful games. Sam kind of does it in a way that doesn't always show in the box score. Kind of like Tyree. I mean, his does show in the box score a little bit more than Sam at times, just because all of a sudden you look at the box score and, oh, Tyree's in double figures again, and he's guarding the other team's best one player. Shot. Yeah, 4 for 6 with 15 points. He hits all his free throws. But Rocky's had some pretty big games where I think he's had in the 20s and 30s some double-doubles. He affects the game on the defensive end with block shots. He's just kind of the emotional motor for the team, and I think that gets recognized a little more as far as player of the year talks go.
Sure. No, that's fair. I understand. All right, before we get to prediction time, folks, I want to make mention of our friends over at Rise Training and Fitness in Moorhead. Rise Training and Fitness was developed and is now owned by North Dakota State legend Chase Morlock, our guy from Moorhead, and his buddy, also from Moorhead, Aaron Lean, who was a star basketball player at MSUM in his own right. These two started in a garage working, creating a fitness program for, you know, beyond college age folks looking to get back in shape, but have expanded their practice. They are dealing with high school athletes younger than that. They're dealing with college athletes. And of course, you know, with adults working on adult fitness, working on, you know, living a longer life, being healthier, being more flexible, losing weight, those kind of things, but also getting kids prepared for baseball, football, hockey, you know, all the things that parents are so fond of watching their kids succeed at. Aaron and Chase are going to help them succeed. And like I said, they can help you succeed as well. I've really enjoyed my time in their open sessions from 11 to 1 for the adult fitness. And I'm looking to hopefully after this little vacation really get back on the grind because we're going to be pretty regimented, folks. The schedule is unforgiving when football and basketball season collide, and that is right down the pack. Just coming down the line, man. And so I am hoping to be a little bit more diligent and get into a little bit more of a routine when we return from the desert. They do a phenomenal job, Rise Training and Fitness over in Moorhead. All right, Nate, before we go, it is prediction time. How do you think the weekend goes? We both nailed the split last weekend.
I think Friday night's game, teams are going to be scouted very well. We're going to, obviously, you're going to know the sets. And I think NDSU wins one in the low 70s. I think their defense is going to come through. I think they're not going to be able to keep the game in the 60s, which would be ideal. Oral Roberts just has too much firepower. I think NDSU wins a close one, 3-4 on Friday in the 70s. And I think Saturday it's going to be they're trying to get a sweep. They're going to play limited bench, and it's going to be a shootout in the 80s. And I think NDSU is going to find a way to win both. I really do. Like you said on the podcast, Oral Roberts hates coming to the Dakotas. It's part of the reason why they left the league a few years back. Yeah. They hated coming up to Sioux Falls. They'd have the one seed every year when Sutton was there, and they had always had one of the best teams in the league, and they would always blow it in Sioux Falls. So I don't think they're going to like coming up to cold weather. You're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, probably getting some rain, and they don't like making this trip and playing on back-to-back days. They're going to try to hopefully get a split out of it to stay in the race, but I think NDSU is going to be ready to roll.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, too, is they are coming off their bye. So these guys have 2 weeks' worth of legs. I think that advantage will be pretty much taken away on Saturday. But Friday night, it could play a role. NDSU coming off, you know, a short rotation, travel, you know, they had to go, you know, they flew into Kansas City through Denver, you know, long travel, short rotation. I think if Oral Roberts is able to steal one, it's going to be tonight, which you're getting this on a Friday. I don't think they will. I'm with you. I do think that the Bison sweep this weekend, which will move them to 10-2 on the Summit League season. All right, everybody. Thank you so, so very much for listening to this podcast yet again. Have a phenomenal weekend. Stay safe, stay warm, and go Bison.